Should Mike Trout really be considered one of the worst contracts in baseball? Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Wednesday, December 4th, your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. Follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on Twitter and the social medias and whatnot. If you go find him on Twitter, point out the Phillies fans wearing a Braves shirt. I love when things like that happen. And Troy, a lot of news to get to. I want to talk about the reports that Juan Soto's narrowed his list and how the offers have escalated here. I want to talk about Aroldis Chapman going to the Boston Red Sox. Some of the news this morning about potential trades for Garrett Crochet. But first, The Athletic put out an article of the 10 worst contracts in baseball right now. And some of these are very obvious, right? Anthony Rendon, he's barely played. When he has played, he wasn't very good. He was a negative WAR player last year. 206 at-bats, zero home runs. Like, that makes total sense. Chris Bryant has just been incredibly hurt and not that good in Colorado. But on the list at number six is Mike Trout with the Los Angeles Angels. And does Mike Trout deserve to be on the same list as guys who have both been bad and hurt, like Trevor Story, or Giancarlo Stanton, or, you know, some of these incredibly bad underperformers? Does Mike Trout deserve to be on this list?
No, not at all. I mean, when you look at the list, you see guys like Mike Trout and Jacob DeGrom, and then a couple spots down, you've got Javier Baez, one of the worst hitters in baseball. And it's crazy. And their reasoning for it is because that for DeGrom and Trout is because they've been hurt. And if that is the case and you're going to include guys like that on a list like this, then why is Byron Buxton not on this list? Byron Buxton has played 100 games in his career, in his entire career, twice. He did so this year, and he did it in like 2018, I think was the last time before this year. He is nowhere near as good as Mike Trout, and obviously he doesn't pitch, so he's not as good as Jacob DeGrom, but Mike Trout definitely does not deserve to be on this list with how good he has been throughout his career and how good he is when he is on the field. And with the Angels discussing moving him to a corner outfield spot, those injuries might go away.
Yeah, and I feel like that's the big thing that you kind of have to do, is understanding that he's going into his age 33 season. You need to relieve some of the wear and tear on his legs. It was amazing to me that the Yankees put Aaron Judge in center field this season, right? I didn't understand why you didn't have one in one corner and the other guy in the other corner. But for Mike Trout, they talk about the size of the deal when he signed it, 12 years, $426 million. And the reason that he's in here is because there's 6 years left at $37 million apiece. But if you go back and you look at when Mike Trout signed this, spring training before 2019, it's hard to argue that this wasn't that this was a bad deal when you signed it. Because reminding everybody, Mike Trout, after 2018, he had played in 8 seasons in the majors. He had a partial season in 2011, 40 games. And after that, he was in, you know, he had 7 full campaigns. He had a rookie of the year finish. A rookie of the year win. He had 2 MVP wins, 4 other runner-ups for MVP, and a 4th place finish. And at that point, when he signed this deal, his career batting average was .307. He had 240 home runs with a .990 OPS. Oh, and 189 stolen bases. And it's kind of hard to argue that this was a bad deal when he signed it. The longevity, I think, is the thing that you worry about, because obviously if you have injuries on the back half, kind of like we pointed out, that's where you end up with the with it looking like a bad contract. But he had been worth 64.6 WAR in his career, like in his career when he signed the deal. And I guess my question on this is, seeing how even the best player in baseball, which he was the best player in baseball when he signed, the best player in baseball's contract can be considered a bad contract because he's dealt with injuries. And to that point, from the when he signed the contract on, he only has two seasons of over 100 games played. 2019, he played 134. 2022, he played 119. So he's averaged, since then, he's averaged 76 games a year. Seeing how that is now considered a top 10 bad contract in baseball, should that be a warning sign about going huge on a guy like Juan Soto on a deal that would take him to age 40, given the fact that Trout's deal would take him through age 38, and we're already talking about, because of injuries, it's one of the worst deals in baseball?
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely something that teams have to think about, especially with the massive deal that Juan Soto is going to get, which we are going to talk about here shortly. But it's with Juan Soto, the I think that the difference between Mike Trout and Juan Soto is that in his younger days, Mike Trout was a really good defender in center field, or in the outfield in general, and Juan Soto's not a good defender in the outfield, and he's going to be moved to a designated hitter spot sooner rather than later, and or first base like Bryce Harper was, to keep him on the field and help prolong that longevity.
Yeah, and for you know, the comparison here, when Mike Trout signed, he had just finished his age 26 season, was the runner-up for MVP. Soto just finished his age 25 season and was the third place finisher for MVP. But the career numbers, you know, batting average of 285 in career for Soto, so he's behind where Trout was there. 201 homers, he's behind where Trout was there, and doesn't have the defensive value that Mike Trout has. It feels like this could be risky if there's injuries, kind of like, you know, to your point there. And let's go ahead and talk about that. The Ken Rosenthal put a report out, I believe it was yesterday evening, that the floor is now $600 million. The bidding for all the teams that are still in, Scott Boras said that Soto has started eliminating teams, that the bidding is now $600 million. The floor, all remaining contenders have made offers over $600 million. It was reported that the teams that were in on him originally, Mets, Yankees, Red Sox, Blue Jays, and Dodgers. I'm going to assume you've knocked two of those teams out and you're in a final three. Who would you think the final three would be for Juan Soto at this point in time?
For me, it's probably the Mets, the Yankees, and the Red Sox. And he's going to stay in the Northeast. It's crazy to think that the Dodgers could be one of the teams that are knocked out of a big time free agent, but no, I think that he wants to stay on the East Coast. And I think with the track record we've seen lately with the Dodgers signing all of their big time free agents and extending Tommy Edmund, they want to really lean into those deferrals. And Juan Soto doesn't want the deferrals. He wants to be paid, and he potentially wants some opt outs in it. And then the Toronto Blue Jays, they're for some reason not somewhere that it really any big-time free agent wants to go.
Yeah, and that's a really kind of surprising thing, is when the money's equivalent. Supposedly they had offered the exact same thing to Ohtani, or they had agreed to the same structure for Ohtani that the Dodgers did, and he chose the Dodgers over the Blue Jays, and it's hard to argue it was a bad call when he made it. Obviously, now in retrospect, we can say it was the right decision because he won MVP in a world championship. Yeah, the reports are that the deal's expected to be 12 years. The present-day value should exceed Ohtani's. Ohtani's deal is valued at $460 million for the luxury tax and $438 million in value by the Players Association. 12 years, $600 million. Is that a contract? If let's just say it's that. It could be more, obviously. Let's say it's 12 years, $600 million. is, do you see anybody in baseball that you think would one day break the size of that deal in either dollar amount or years? I think we've had a deal longer than 12 years, but is there anybody you can think of right now that could eventually top that? Or would we feel comfortable saying in this generation of ball players, that's probably the largest free agent contract we'll see outside of Shohei Ohtani's?
Not to bring up the GOAT twice in a 10-minute span, but Bryce Harper's current deal is 13 years. But
here we go.
But yeah, no, as far as the current landscape of baseball and the current crop of players that are in Major League Baseball, I don't see anybody that is going to top the $600 million. Bobby Witt Jr. probably might have done it if he didn't already sign that extension with the Royals. And but other than that, the only other person that could maybe come close, and I don't think he has an extension, is Gunnar Henderson, but even that's questionable if he decides to stay with the Orioles because they're not going to pay him that much. And
yeah, it's just, he's been a generational player. And yeah, I think it's something where, if I remember reading this right in Baseball Reference, his career on base percentage of .421 is the highest in baseball right now.
Yep.
And so, you know, that's something where, like you said, you've got questions about his defense in the future. He was, I find it, we have to mention, he was a Gold Glove candidate in right field. But we expect that to decline a little bit going forward. So we'll see what happens. In the meantime, the Boston Red Sox are not just content to sit and wait on Juan Soto to sign. They have gone and made some other deals. They brought in free agent lefty reliever Aroldis Chapman on a one-year, $10.75 million deal. He'll be 37 years old before next season starts. He had a 3.79 ERA for the Pirates last year. Picked up 14 saves late when he became the closer, taking over for, I think it was David Bednar. And so this is something where the Red Sox had to figure out the back end, right? Kenley Jansen going to free agency. Setup man Chris Martin going to free agency. And so the only real options they had here was Justin Slayton, who was a late inning leverage arm as a rookie, and Liam Hendricks, who spent last season recovering from Tommy John. Does it feel like Aroldis Chapman is probably the closer in Boston, or do you think, especially if they don't sign Juan Soto, they're going to try to go out and get another flamethrower to be behind Chapman in the back of the bullpen?
With the way their roster is currently constructed, Aroldis Chapman definitely has to be the closer because you don't know what you're going to get from Liam Hendricks. He's about, I think he's 40, and he's coming off of that surgery. If he's not 40, he's pretty close to it. And then it's Justin Slayton. Like you said, he was a leverage arm as a rookie. So maybe Justin Slayton, but as it stands, I would go Aroldis Chapman.
How was Liam Hendricks only 35 years old? He debuted in like 2011. He's played for 13 years already. He's only 35. That's nuts. He'll be 36 before the season starts, but he's surprisingly not 40 yet. It's wild. I thought he was older too.
He even looks so much older than 35 years old.
He does look older than 35. It's just, it's really interesting to me to see the Aroldis Chapman career path, right? Because it's been so many seasons where, especially recently, where it's been a lot of one-year deals. And it's odd to think of if he's truly as good as it feels like the public perception of him is, why has he kind of been unable to stick with teams, right? He signed with the Cubs in 2016. I believe they traded him to the Yankees, right? And then he was with the Yankees through 2022. 2023, he was with both the Rangers and the Royals. He got traded midseason. He actually was the return. Cole Reagans was the return for the Royals. Totally worked out for them, right?
Yeah.
And then spent 2024 with Pittsburgh. So he's been with six teams already, obviously 15-year career. And he's gone over 100 miles an hour in every single season of his career with fastball. So one of the hardest throwers in the game, obviously as a lefty, that's exceptionally rare. Is this, at the end of his career, are we going to go back and say from a physical talent perspective, Aroldis Chapman was one of those players that had all of the tools but because of some of the off the field issues, because of just poor performance and things like that, he never really hit his full potential.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, he was the first guy where if you would go on any of the statistics websites, he would have his own disclaimer because he was the only guy that was consistently throwing 104 miles an hour every game. And at one point, he held the record for the fastest pitch thrown in a Major League Baseball game. And it's crazy to think about how good he was when he debuted in the majors and for those first few years with the Cincinnati Reds. And then it's really, like you said, it's really because of the off-field issues and other things. It's just kind of amounted to not much for Aroldis Chapman. And yeah, I think this is going to be a case of when all is said and done and years after he's retired, it's going to be people looking back and thinking what could have been.
Yeah. Fun little trivia, not fun, I guess, but a little interesting trivia note. Aroldis Chapman was the first player disciplined by the league's new personal conduct policy that they put in place in August 2015, where they could suspend a player without a conviction. He was suspended 30 games in the 2016 season for an alleged domestic violence incident. Was never, no charges were filed by the police. So obviously he was never convicted of anything, but was still suspended. And that's a policy that we've seen used multiple other times by the league at this time. And he actually, that was where he was originally supposed to go to the Dodgers in a trade. And that trade was put on hold when the news came out. The trade was later canceled and the Reds ended up moving him to the Yankees 3 weeks later. So some of the destinations of his career have kind of changed because of that incident, but just really interesting kind of scene that he's already kind of signed and it's a 1 year deal. Like nobody seems to want to make a long-term commitment to him ever since he left the Yankees. Couple really interesting news things that came out. John Morosi of MLB Network dropped some news this morning that among candidates to acquire Garrett Crochet from the Chicago White Sox are the Chicago Cubs and the Cincinnati Reds. If you were trying to make a trade, if you're the White Sox and you're trying to figure out who to send Garrett Crochet to, which of these teams are you calling up first?
Out of those two, probably the Cubs. I think they've got a lot better farm system and guys that are right there. I mean, they've got a logjam in the outfield and really at third base. So they have more options that are pretty close to major league ready that they could send to the White Sox for Garrett Crochet. And while they may not need someone of his caliber as a pitcher in their rotation, he would definitely, he would move the needle a lot more than Matthew Boyd does.
Yeah, true. And I think the first team I'm calling there as well is the Cubs. They have 8 top 100 prospects per MLB pipeline. 5 of the top 6 on that grouping are position players who finished finished 2024 in either AAA or the bigs. And the next guy, I think number 7 on that list, Cam Smith is their first round pick from last year who finished in AA. And this is something we've talked about this before. Almost every position in the Cubs roster is a guy that is above average, but not in the top 5 at his position for the most part. And so it feels like this is a situation where these prospects have to be significantly better than the major leaguer in front of them to get a place in the lineup every day. And so it makes sense that they would be the more attractive trade target, especially because so many of those are position players, and that's what the White Sox want. When you look at the Reds, I feel like they've already made a non-prospect trade. They do have 3 top 100 position player prospects, Edwin Arroyo, infielder Sal Stewart, Cam Collier, and an infield that is already pretty, even with the Jonathan India trade, is already pretty full to the point where they've played Spencer Steer and his not great defense in left field for the last few seasons. They also have guys like Matt McClain, Rhys Hines, the outfielder. It feels to me like these are probably two, if they're legitimately in it, if Morosi's right, and we have no reason to think he's not, these are probably the two most attractive trade partners for the White Sox, simply because they, I feel like, are the only ones that can give you both quantity and quality. There's other teams who can give you three or four position players. There are other teams who can give you one or two really good bats, right? The Baltimore Orioles could give you Kobe Mayo, for instance. The Boston Red Sox have a couple really prominent guys, Marcelo Mayer, Roman Anthony. Not that you should trade Roman Anthony, but lots of guys up there. These two teams feel like the only ones that can give you both quantity and quality. And the Cubs specifically kind of lead that list. I find it interesting that despite being in the same city, the Cubs and White Sox have actually been surprisingly involved with trades with each other. They've made four trades since 2017. I think the first one was Jose Quintana was the first one on that list. Does that feel weird that the two teams in the same city are active trade partners? Or is that something where you can kind of do right by the players because they don't have to pick up and move their entire lives if they get traded because they're in the same city?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of the second one. And plus, with the teams being in the different leagues, one in the American League and one in the National League, I think that, and plus both of them are on the vastly different levels of contention, that I think that I don't think that it's as crazy as if, say, the New York Yankees and the Boston Red Sox were, even though they're not the same city, they're pretty close geographically, that with them making trades, and you know, we've seen how them making trades works. It causes a curse on a team for many, many years.
Many years. Final question on this trade. If he goes to, if Garrett Crochet goes to the Cubs, your six starting pitchers, four of them are lefties. Is that a problem? Is that something where you have to be concerned about overexposure of lefties, especially given the fact that outside of Crochet, everybody's average fastball velocity is, I think, 93 or below, right? Now, they make it work. Shota Imanaga obviously has, you know, the flat VAA, and he works well up in the zone with high IVB and all that stuff. But is it a problem that outside of Crochet, you got three other soft tossing lefties, and then you have another lefty in Crochet in your top six starters?
With Shota Imanaga in the rotation and as many lefties as they have, I think that would actually be beneficial for them to have six starters, even with four of them being lefties, because then they could just kind of mix and match. They wouldn't have to go with a set rotation. Yeah. They'd have one day a week, and they can mix it up every week if they wanted to, and make sure everybody gets their rest. And if there's any nagging injury or whatever, they can just skip their start and move on to the next guy. And so I don't think that's as big as an issue as some fans might think it would be.
Yeah, Boyd would be the one that I would flex back and forth between the rotation and the bullpen, depending on rest days and how that was going to work out. And as I was reading a lot about this when the Dodgers signed Snell. The trend now in baseball is 5 days rest. The average starter gets 5 days rest between starts. So that's just kind of become the new schedule. And whether it's spot starts, whether it's a bullpen game, whether it's just utilizing off days, not every team's carrying six starters on the major league roster, but just about every single team is using six starters on a regular basis and doing 5 days of rest between starts. So I think it's not that big of a deal, provided you either have a guy who can flex back and forth, or the schedule allows you to make that start. And then the big thing, I think about this a lot with the Braves, the big thing is making sure that extra start in the week, whoever it might be, whether it's a call-up, whether it's a spot start, whatever, isn't just terrible quality. The Braves had that issue last year where they had guys like Alan Winans and Darius Vines and even Bryce Elder making spot starts that were not good. All those guys had ERAs over six. Winans was like 11 or 12. And because of it, the team just dramatically underperformed in that extra game every week. So I think that's kind of the new trend. I wonder if at one point in time, we'll just get to the point where you change the roster rules where teams are allowed to have six starters versus needing to, without having to take out of the bullpen to have that sixth guy.
Yeah, I think that's coming down the pipe sooner rather than later. I think that's going to be another change that happens during Rob Manfred's tenure as commissioner. But before we do get out of here, I do have one question that came up, and this is for the Red Sox fans. If the Red Sox do wind up being the team that signs Juan Soto, do you trade Roman Anthony at that point and try and get a major league piece?
If it's me, like, you have so many outfielders already, but he is supposed to be so good. Mm-hmm. We've heard, I mean, he's one of the top prospects in all of baseball. Yep. If it's me, I am looking to trade an outfielder, but the outfielder I'm looking to trade preferably is not Roman Anthony, right? If you believe Jaron Duran, what he did is sustainable, you've got 4 more years of control of him. You've got something. If you can dump the Masataka Yoshida money, you do that. Maybe it's a deal like they did with Chris Sale and the Braves, where they just throw Yoshida at somebody, offer them a bunch of money to cover the first year of the deal, and take whatever they can get back in return. I do think you trade somebody. I just don't think it should be Roman Anthony. I think he can be one of the better outfielders in baseball. He is one of the best prospects in baseball already. And if I'm having to figure out, and you've got guys behind him too. You've got Miguel Blyce. You've got Johnson Garcia, the password is his nickname. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you really definitely need to pick and choose where you make a move. You do have to make a move, though. You can't carry 5 outfielders that all deserve everyday playtime. And, you know, that even doesn't even count your bench piece and Rob Refschneider, who ended up getting 300 plate appearances last year. So you got to trade somebody. Roman Anthony wouldn't be the guy for me, though. I'd look to trade. Maybe you sell high on Duran. Maybe you try to dump Yoshida's money. Maybe you trade Willier Abreu. I just don't think you trade Roman Anthony out of that group.
Okay. Yeah, I got you. That was just when you brought up his name and we already talked about Soto. That's that question popped into my mind. I'm with you, though. I wouldn't trade Roman Anthony. I'd trade one of the guys that already has major league experience because of how good Roman Anthony is expected to be. And he's expected to be right up there with what Jaron Duran did last year. So,
yeah. And maybe from a money perspective, that's something where you use that major league piece with a bunch of team control to go to the White Sox and get Crochet, because Crochet shouldn't be too expensive for the next bit of team control he has. And you need to move a major league piece. So you can say, here's 28-year-old Jaron Duran, who's got, you know, 4 years of control, or here's Willier Abreu, who has, I think, 5 years of control. Like, maybe you go and you offer that's the keystone of the piece, along with the prospects who you don't think will break the lineup over your incumbents, right? You know, maybe you probably can't dump Trevor Story on them, but maybe you turn around and you say, here's Marcelo Mayer as well. Or, you know, maybe that's where they try to move Rafi Devers to first, and they say, here's Tristan Casas as well to go with it. I don't think you should trade Casas, but maybe they try to move 2 major league pieces as well as a prospect or two. And they hope that the quality and the major league readiness of these guys can make up for the fact that they can get beat on quantity by a team like the Cubs or the Reds or something.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. And they would also be a good fit for Garrett Crochet too. They really need pitching help. So that would work out on multiple fronts.
Absolutely. And their rotation as of now, all righties. Red Sox don't project to have a single lefty available as of now. Tanner Houck, Brian Bellow, Cutter Crawford, my buddy Dick Fitz sat over near him for an Auburn baseball fall game a couple weeks ago. And Cooper Criswell, all right-handed pitchers. So getting that lefty in Crochet would be nice.
They got a Matthew McConaughey rotation.
There you go.
All right.
This is First Pitch for Wednesday, December 4th. You're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell. Either way, tell all your friends. Go to firstpitchpodcast.com to get their daily MLB recaps. And until next time, this has been First Pitch.